Hey, this is Josh Sparks, Operations Manager at Midwest Whitetail, and this is the Prairie Farm Podcast.
I'm Doug Duren, a landowner trying to be a conservationist.
I'm Tabitha Panis, President of the Iowa Prairie Network.
I'm Ryan Callahan, Director of Conservation at Meat Eater.
Angela from Axe and Root Homestead.
Chris Helzer, the Nebraska Director of Science for the Nature Conservancy.
Judd McCullum from Working Class Bowhunter.
Taylor Keene, Founder of Sacred Seed.
Ryan Bryson with Bryson Wildlife.
This is Luke Fritsch.
This is James Holtz.
Joy Van Weingarten.
Sam Sobel.
Phil Ebert.
Julie Meechan.
And you are listening to the Prairie Farm.
The Prairie Farm.
Prairie Farm.
Prairie Farm.
Prairie Farm Podcast.
Prairie Farm Podcast.
Welcome to the Prairie Farm Podcast.
It's very, very helpful. You can't control like your main page where there's like all five of you or three of you or whatever.
Yeah.
But you get a native recording for each participant.
Oh.
So you get a full res, full audio download.
So it records from their mic or their computer, basically.
Yeah.
That is so much better.
I'll send it to you guys.
Because we use Google Meet, but actually, I mean, it's really janky. There have been times where we'll use Google Meet, and we'll just say, like, hey, can you record on your end? We'll record on our end, and we'll just clap and sync it up, you know?
Yeah, this one is, if it's super bad and you can't hear them, it's hard to still have a conversation, right? But that has nothing to do with the actual recording. But, yeah, so, like, if you were at your house and he was in wherever and I was in Des Moines, and you can also connect your mic. I connect my R5 through it.
Mm-hmm.
So my mic looks good. My mic sounds good. Camera looks good. I am able to download my recording, Gavin's recording, and it comes video
awesome.
And audio.
So, but only one person needs an account. Like, we can
correct.
Record.
Other, yeah, and you can do awesome. Up to like 10 people. Man,
dude, that's awesome.
It's legit.
Is it through Zoom or
no,
is it
it's through StreamYard?
Okay,
yeah, I'll send
thing.
You the details on it. But it answers a lot of people's problems of why they don't do Zoom podcasts because it's like annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could have this great podcast and then the video is really fuzzy,
right?
Because they had a poor internet connection. It's kind of like now the issue is like you got to be like, hey, stay on while it uploads. You know, so like just say, walk away from your computer for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then their version uploads for me to download.
Cool.
So, 17.
Right. 17. Man. Cool.
I started watching when I was 12 years old.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You started watching when you were 12 years old. What, when you were on there, were you like commenting at all? Like, were you like.
Yeah, so Winky had what was called Whitetail Watch back in the day. Like, he tried creating his own social platform, Omnibus Whitetail.
Who did that?
Winky, Bill.
Oh, yeah,
Bill
Winky. Yeah, Bill, yeah.
Sorry, I call him Winky.
Ah. I'm rolling, by the way, just so you know. Jump right in. Yeah, so what were you saying?
No, you're good.
Is he calling?
Yeah.
The man himself?
Should I answer it?
Yeah, you should answer. You got to answer your boss.
We got KCCI
so,
right quick.
What did Dad want? What did the old boss man want?
He's just... filling me in. He sent me these videos and this picture. I didn't know what it was all about. And then he called me. I'm like, all right, I better answer. But yeah, sorry about that.
No, dude,
no, you're good. So he said there was a cop chase.
Yeah. Like they tried to turn in by killers and I wonder where they were going.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they wrecked him or threw those tire strips out or whatever.
No, dude, those are only in movies. Those aren't real.
Well, all four tires are popped in the picture he sent me.
Oh my goodness, that's great. So it's right by
and
the corner on our farm.
Yeah,
so right there
it
where
all
he's
came
gonna...
to an end, right?
Oh my goodness,
basically in our SOG field.
All right, anyway, where were we? You were 12 years old watching Midwest Whitetail.
Yeah, no, I so my dad introduced
here pull
me.
Your mic a little closer to you.
Is this right?
Yeah,
I always get yelled at when I'm here. So bow hunting for me started with my stepdad. I moved to Iowa when I was six. Basically, he shotgun hunted, did some bow hunting. Wouldn't let me hunt until I had my hunter safety when I was like 11.
Mm-hmm.
12 was the first season I got to hunt, but I always wanted to watch outdoor television, right? We used to have TV growing up.
Yeah.
So I think we had one VHS tape of the Drurys. We had one, I think it was like the first Monster Bucks that would have been VHS or DVD. But that was my only consumption of hunting content. And once I kind of learned how to use a computer in 2012,
yep.
or excuse me, 2008, I remember typing
in. Yeah, that seemed
in,
a little late.
Yeah, sorry. It was Free Hunting Show is what I kept typing in.
Hmm.
And at that time, there was Whitetail Properties. Like, they had a very good media presence, and it was free.
Yep.
And then one day Midwest Whitetail popped up, and it was Iowa, and that was the first year Build started the show. And ever since then, I was just like many people, every Monday, dream big, and
man,
you're there. And if you would have told me then that today we'd be here in this position,
yeah,
you're like the general manager. What's your title?
I don't know.
Okay.
If it goes
besides
right,
Winky, the owner, who's your boss?
So Bill no longer owns it. He sold it in 2019. Yeah, 2020 was his last year. No,
because he sold it to Skip. Nope. Sly.
So,
but no, not then. But I think in the past, right?
He so partnered? Skip was a partial owner. In 2018, there was four owners total, including Bill. 2019, Realtree purchased. In 2019, Midwest Whitetail went from being a company to an asset. And so that was where 41 North Media got created for us on that side of things. That's a long story that, you know, I mean, it just today,
yeah,
it's,
yeah,
you know, the same people.
Yeah. When did you jump in? Like,
so I, again, you know, reaffirming here, I was a viewer my whole life. It was my senior year running track that I ran.
Where were you at? What high school?
We were at Waukee High School.
Oh, yeah.
Running. And I looked across and I was like, that's Bill Winky. And I just broke warm-ups, ran over to him, shook his hand, introduced myself, and he's like, so what's up? And I like didn't say anything. It was a super it was a very uncomfortable interaction.
I like deer.
Yeah, I love your show. You're awesome. But that was kind of the beginning of like meeting Bill. You know, he ended up, you know, we ran against him a few more times. And then he actually filmed our state track events.
Okay.
And put them on the website.
What did you run?
Hurdles and 400s.
Were nice. You good? You made it to state, enough. I guess. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was enough. I mean,
those are grueling races. Was that the 300 high hurdles?
400 low hurdles.
400 low.
400 lows. The shuttle hurdle.
I think I've said this
highs.
Story on the podcast before, but your hunting running story reminds me of, so Cam Haynes, right?
Yeah.
The hardcore runner, hardcore hunter. Well, I decided, Kent convinced me to listen to one of his books.
Actually, Endurance. No, I think you just came across it on your own.
Well, but I came across it.
I had already
listened
to it.
Yeah, and you had talked about it several times. And I was like, man, I need to like get to know this guy a little bit better than like the snippets I'd seen on social media. So I started listening to it, and that's a horrible idea. You do not want to listen to a Cam Haynes book while you're running, because I remember one day it was supposed to be like a light run. My long runs at that point were like 10 miles, and my light runs were like 3-ish miles. I remember getting a 3-ish mile mark and then being like, okay, this is good. I'm going to turn around. And Cam Haynes is like, I don't even understand how anybody could stop running before their muscles are tired. I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll run a little further. I get to like 5-6 mile mark. And I'm like, okay, my knees and my ankles are hurting. This was supposed to be a more restful day. I guess I'm going to. And right as I'm thinking that, the audiobook is like, I don't understand why anybody would stop just because they feel pain. I go to muscle failure every single day. I finally made it, I think, almost 8 miles, something like that. This is enough, man. Turn Cam Haynes off.
I mean, if I look at one thing that definitely had a huge bearing in the parallels of my career today, it was track.
Really?
It was very strange. I played soccer my whole life, and then when I ended up in Des Moines for my senior year, I ran track. I mean, it was just, I'd never ran it before, but it was the biggest blessing. My coach, Joe McQuarrie, you know, it was very non-traditional how our practices ended up turning into. Like, we'd get what we're supposed to do, and then we'd go do it. There was no, like, direct coaching some days. And it just really turned into his mentality was, like, he doesn't need to know how hard we're practicing, doesn't need to know if we're hydrating, doesn't need to know what we did in between the lines. When we get to race day, our times will reveal everything. And, you know, as it's progressed to today, I look back and go, thank God for track. It's the same career as editing, you know, and videography. Nobody cares what you do on a daily basis as long as your deadlines are met.
Yeah.
You know, and so
good point.
That's obviously a long tangent, and I feel like we've bounced into a lot of directions already. But regardless, my title at Midwest Whitetail, I tell people, is if things are going correctly, it's my team's fault. And if it's going wrong, then you can say, all right, it's my fault. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a very full circle position to be in, a very big responsibility. You know, a lot of people have some misunderstandings about who's a part of Millis Whitetail, who owns it. Our group is responsible for continuing the legacy of it. And
what do you mean our group?
This is the team that's there today.
Okay. You know, because you guys were there before it was bought out and became an
asset. I'm just saying, like, today there's the team, right? There's Mike, Lee, Drake, Owen, Zach, Caleb, Gavin, Rye. I mean, Tyler, Justin. The list is long.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the show that inspired all of us, the legacy that Bill left behind with the, you know, the dream big adage, it's our responsibility to continue Memphis Whitetail. You know, being more than a hunting show and, you know, again, going back to 12 years old, I just was a viewer. And I was a viewer for many years. And there's been some very interesting opportunities, you know, along the way. So.
And I think it's important for listeners to understand, too, that Midwest Whitetail is, like, they've become a pillar in the hunting media space. So when Josh talks about carrying on that legacy, I mean, let's just name some of the people that came out of those earlier years. You got Sam Soholt, right?
Oh, yeah. No, so, and that's what I mean. Like, to give you some perspective, like, kid me, watch Sam Soholt, Aaron, Jared Mills, you know, Warbritton. Those guys, Drew Yarkoski, they were a part of that original nucleus of interns. You know what I mean? I remember to today, like, watching Sam Soholt and Mike Sawyer double up on, you know, one of the farms. I was like, that's the coolest thing in the world. This guy, this guy's bow hunting and they're doubling in the tree and filming it. And, you know, like, you just progress all the way through. And that was like 2011, 12, somewhere in there. Then you have Aaron, then you have Eric Lewis, you know, like, or excuse me, John Lewis, Eric Barber, Zach Farrenbaugh. I mean, like, so you're going a little bit further. Here, the hunting public, you know, separates. The hunting public separating is essentially what allowed me an opportunity. I mean, like, I was a junior in college going to school, trying to prepare for the opportunity to go do the internship.
That's
the only reason I went to college. Like,
that's cool.
You know, and I.
You're living your dream.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, like, literally. Yeah. So there's been a lot of, you know, progressions. I'll never forget that. That was 2017. And, it, you know, it was kind of one of those, like, can you do Chasing November? 2 months before that, 3 months before that, I was just the guy giddy to see it come out. And I remember when I was like, yeah, I can do that, I was like, I'm going to ruin this.
Really?
Like, I'm responsible now for ruining the one thing I loved.
Did you feel like you went into it with the skills you needed, like the editing skills?
No.
Oh, man.
No, but I had the right people in the right time. You know what I mean? Like, Jared Mills was extremely influential in everything that I do today. I mean, so, like I said, when I say I went to school to hunt, I mean, I went back to Eastern Iowa, was at Kirkwood Community College, spent my money probably slightly illegally that I got for school, bought my first cameras, bought editing equipment, just because I was like, I got to prepare for this internship opportunity. And I met what ended up being Jared's wife's cousin, just randomly in a class. And he's like, what are you doing with all this camera equipment and hunting? And I was like, I don't know, but this is what I want to do. And he was like, that's crazy, man. My cousin's husband does that stuff.
Wow.
And I was like, who is it? You know? And it was like, Jared Mills. And I was like, George Brett, Jared Mills, which if you followed along with Lewis Whitetail at that point, big saga occurring there, big storyline. And I was like, you have got to put me in touch with this guy. You know? And ended up getting his email. I sent him a very disgusting, sappy, I'll do anything, whatever you need. Met him at IHOP.
I've sent one of those emails before, Nick?
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of one of those, like, whatever I can do. I didn't know what I was doing, but I've always understood who you surround yourself with is as far as you'll be able to go.
Oh, yeah.
And
so you met him at IHOP, dude. That's what's up. By the way, hey, can I have a job? Can you pass syrup?
Yeah. Well, at that point, you know, I'm still in the mindset of, like, I'm training to do the internship.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, and
Jared, so you weren't even a for sure spot in the internship?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so you were just...
You had to be a college graduate at that point.
Okay, and you were like, I'm going to graduate college. I'm going to get all the skills I could possibly get to have this dream job. You are the most focused human I've ever met.
That's not true at all.
Well, I mean, nobody thinks about that. You know, no one goes through college thinking this is the job.
Yeah, but like even then, man, it was just an obsession with hunting. You know, I always joke when we do our intern applications today, I'm like, I never would have been hired.
Yeah.
Ever. Because if somebody said, why are you doing this? Like, my reasons were very simple. I wanted to be bow hunting more than I would in another job. And I wanted to stop getting feedback from people that told me I was doing it too much. And I was like, well, I guess I got to make a few bucks and learn a skill.
Yeah.
But just to round out the whole Jared thing, so he was gracious enough to let me go and chat. Like, I just shadowed him, right? If he went to his farm or any of the properties he hunted, I got to tag along. And he just, where I'm going with this is, like, you really have to get lucky. You can have all the work ethic in the world and have opportunities, but you got to get lucky to have the right people at the right time.
Yeah.
And when I think about to today, it's, I've just been very lucky to have that. Doesn't matter what phase, I've always had the right person at the right time to keep me going in the direction of forward.
I mean, it's pretty humble of you to call it luck, but there's a common denominator there, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're hungry and you're you really want what you want. And I mean, we talk about focus. You were joking about it and you said obsessed. I think obsessed is just focus taking the next level, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it, I often wonder what I could be doing today had I actually been focused, though. I mean, like, man. I had a lot of people, like, hey, man, you should probably grow up, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, all of a sudden, you're 25, 26, and you're like, all right. And I'm just now turning, I'm 27. So, you know, I don't look at it and go, I really started to try to do this. And I never fully understood the gravity of being associated with something like a Midwest whitetail in my personal life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just call for what it is. Partied a lot. You know, it was just like, oh, this is fun, having fun. I do a great job on my job, but I just never really got out of that cycle of being an idiot and a kid.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
And then one day I woke up and I was like, I've been a very embarrassing, you know, association with my team.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's a very weird, I look back across all of a sudden 7-8 years of outdoor media. And to be, you know, like I said, it really would need to start from the beginning to explain how we got here today. And I'm not really sure what the direction of what we're trying to go is. It could go in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But, you know.
This is a pretty good direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, regardless, here we are today. You know, I left in 21, got to go work for Mark Drury for 2 years. And like I said, I mean, all the credit in the world to Bill and Jared and, you know, everybody through 17 through 21 of when I worked at Midwest Whitetail. But I definitely, you know, got a mentor in Mark that allowed me a very fresh perspective on what it meant to represent your team.
Was that the only way you were leaving Midwest Whitetails, if a place like Drury's
called? I don't really know. I mean, it just, at that point, like, I needed something, you know, and I don't really want to get into the deep specifics of it, but at that point, it lined up perfectly. You know, I had met Mark a few years prior to that. I've always respected him as a man. You know, one of the things that drew me to a guy like Mark was the Tom Brady effect, as I like to call it. There's just so few people I've met in my life that are at the top and then stay there. There's so few people. I mean, just look across anything. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Everybody has a chance to get there, but then to stay there, to stay cutting edge, to stay relevant, and whatever it is that they're doing, you know, it's like, I just saw that Mark had that. And, you know, frankly, 25-year-old me was like, you know, an unpolished, whatever you want to call it. And I was like, I had self-awareness enough to know that what I was doing was not the best version of me. Mark lived close to me, and it just lined up, you know. And again, it doesn't take anything away from Midwest Whitetail at that point, right?
Right. Yeah.
But that was the move I made, and loved it. Never thought I'd look back, you know. And then 2 years later, here we are.
Yep.
Back in Midwest Whitetail. So, you know, if I've just learned one thing through it all, it's that everybody's on the same team, and that's, you know, you guys have a conservation podcast, and it's like, the hunting space, unfortunately, can get very fragmented and segmented and petty and ego-filled, and there's one thing I've learned. It's like, we really all should just be on the same team. There's not very many of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't trade the path for anything, But today, you know, I feel like I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, that's huge.
Again, you go full circle to 2008, Google searching Midwest Whitetail, and never would have dreamed or imagined.
Yeah.
Hey, you're a big part of, like, is this going to continue or not?
Yeah.
And that's a heavy opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it, you said heavy. Is it like ever daunting? Like, oh, there are a few of us, if we don't continue, this thing falls apart.
It's more just like a responsibility thing. And when I say, like, there's things you can control and there's things you can't control, right?
Yeah.
I can't control how many people watch it. Can't control what people actually say about it, whether they like. You're always compared, you know, to the previous groups, which is totally understandable. Mm-hmm. There's some incredible individuals that mm-hmm. have held a spot of, like, leadership within Midwest Whitetail.
Yeah.
And, you know, for what it's worth, when I say heavy, it's like, okay, think about all the things that come out of Midwest Whitetail. You know, whether it's the shows, whether it's jobs for the guys that work there, whether it's the long standing of a ton of partners that supported Midwest Whitetail, because mm-hmm. obviously we have alluded to a lot of changes that have occurred.
Yeah.
But even just like the internship, you know, like every year we take on four or five different guys who all have the same dream that I do, have the same dream that Rye does or Gavin does or Drake did. We get to play a role in that, you know,
yeah,
and
for sure.
We're redoing it right now. Just have a text right now, Alex Raymond, you know, and it's like, you know, he's doing his own thing. He was my intern last year. RJ Ingles now here from West Virginia. Yeah, it's just cool. When I say it's heavy, it's like, it's it's heavy because of, like I said, I want to 10 years from now be a part of continuing the legacy of what it represents. You know, like Bill always said, dream big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill's not necessarily a part of it every day, but it doesn't mean that the group that's here today cannot continue in its own version the legacy of what Midwest Whitetail offers: education, entertainment, and, you know, experiences through its cinematography that maybe other people in the country don't get to live. But watch one of our videos and you're right there with us.
Well, I think it also offers community. You know, Nicholas is not the hunter here on the podcast. I am.
Is not me.
You know, I've enjoyed watching Midwest Whitetail content for years myself and have interacted with my group of hunting friends, you know, around videos that we see on there. And what I think is so interesting about Midwest Whitetail is you look at Iowa from a resource standpoint.
Yep.
You know, well, that's the corn state. That's the soybean state. Nicholas and I would like to change that back to more of the prairie state.
Yep.
But whitetails, like if you really look at what Iowa has to offer, yes, ag is always going to be number one. But whitetails, whitetail deer hunting, everything around this majestic animal here in what we call the whitetail state, it flows out into these different sections of our economy as a state, and it's very interesting because Midwest Whitetail feels so like ground level, maybe that's the right term, where you guys are reachable. You know, first of all, you're super nice guys. I've talked to a lot of you, and you know, you guys are at the Deer Classic. Anyone who shows up at the Deer Classic can show up and meet these guys that they've seen on YouTube, like you said, since 2008. You know, some, obviously not guys now, but like the channel that's been there that long.
Yep.
Videos with millions of views. I mean, how many views, maybe you don't have this off the top of your head, but would you guess have come through the Midwest Whitetail YouTube channel?
Since its creation?
I
think it's probably fair to say 75 million plus. I mean, depending on short form versus long form, that's a hard answer, but I'd have to look at the lifetime views. But I bet it's long form, episode-wise, probably 75 million plus.
Over, yeah, that's insane.
That's a lot of years.
That's an absolute powerhouse of a channel on YouTube, and yet you guys are so reachable. And so, and for a kid who's 12 years old saying, that's exactly what I want to do, I think it's a testament to what Bill set up and who Bill is as a person. You keep talking about that legacy. I think you guys have done a great job of carrying that
approachability of this huge thing that has existed in the economy of whitetail deer hunting on such a large scale.
Yeah.
It's created community in our state too.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing that we've focused on, you know, at Midwest Whitetail Now, is just culture. And man, I hope that nobody in our group ever loses a very, very big understanding of like our problems on a day to day, a work day, or the stresses of a show. It's like, you know, I'm not trying to take away that problems do exist or stress exists, but it's like, pick your suck. And we have literally the best suck to deal with, right? Like, and it's impossible without viewers who support the show, have interest in the show, support the guys. And frankly, it's impossible without partners. You know, I mean, like, we have great, great partners top to bottom that invest in the series, appreciate what we try to bring to the table for their companies. And, you know, even just like, it's a top to bottom effort, whether you're videoing, editing, hunting, etc. You know, it's the team doesn't stop in Iowa, right? And that's something that I think when people, like, our most popular series is no doubt Chasing November. I mean, if you take some time to really watch those, we have a team of 120, 130 guys across the country.
Yeah.
Every day they go out, they film, they send us their footage, they trust us with managing their media and telling their stories. It's like there's so many different cogs in that Midwest whitetail wheel that you could spend a long time trying to express your appreciation. But like Iowa Deer Classic, it's awesome to talk deer. You know what I mean? Like it's we do it every day anyway. You know what I mean? And I don't think there's a guy that's ever been a Midwest whitetail or is there currently that got into it to be known for millions of views. You know, like it's one thing I feel very comfortable in saying that, like, if the the channel shut down today, I'd still film my hunts. Mike Reed would still film his hunts. Drake would still film his hunts. And then the reason why is just, like, all of us got into it uniquely because, like, it's cool to look at a photo. Or it's cool to go to a buddy and be like, dude, I saw a giant tonight. You want? It's like, we have the opportunity to always be like, let's go watch it.
Right.
Like, that is something that I never will steer away from. You know, that's what keeps me going back. You know, everybody's always like, man, like, why'd you guys do it? And it's like, it wasn't to make hunting easier. Yeah. That's for sure. You know, because that you know, you take two guys to the tree. Yeah. And, I mean, it's sometimes a very incredible feeling to see just how far of a footprint it has. Yeah. And I hope the Midwest Whitetail can continue to be a part of it in a good way. You know, Iowa Sportsman Club, we got trusted with trying to create the video for their inaugural gala at the Deer Classic. Felt like it was a pretty successful message. And I don't know, man. I just got done doing this on the working class, you know, talking to those guys. And it's we're just normal dudes. You know, and there's something for everybody, you know. Like,
oh, yeah.
I have permission farms right now. I don't have own land.
Yep.
I could be the guy that's like, oh, that's unrelatable, you know, whatever. But it's like, look at a Skip Sly, look at a Nolan Riegler, look at a Mike Reed. Yes, they are hunting top-tier farms. They are shooting multiple bucks every year. They're hunting over food plots. They're doing all these things. It didn't pop out of the ground. It's not a weed. It didn't just occur. Yeah. These guys, from different roots and different beginnings, they've built it.
They've built it.
And, you know, one of the things that I said, you know, in the last talk was just like, it's very interesting to me how unpopular it is to dream. Like, it's a popular thing to excuse make and claim the, it's not relatable, I can't do that. And I just don't, I will never understand that, because like we talked about in the beginning here, 2008, what's the entire slogan of the show? It's dream big.
Yeah.
So guys like Mike Reed, guys like Owen Riegler, Skip Sly, how could you ever look at them and say, that's not relatable?
Right, yeah.
That's the exact person you'd want to emulate. Yeah. Chase it, make it happen, work your tail off. Take some luck. But that's my favorite thing about Midwest Whitetail when I think about our team. There's something for everybody. Everybody's at a different phase of life, a phase of hunting. But you can never look at our guys and go, I couldn't do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now, if you have that mentality, and that is, you know, kind of in my mind, you're bringing up the Cameron Haynes thing. Like, Cam, man, like, he extracts the most deep essence of like, man, I am capable of more. You know
what
I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And, like, it's guys like that. Like, what you choose to consume, what you choose to surround yourself with, who you choose to surround yourself with. I mean, that's the product of what you'll become. So
yeah, very well said.
And I mean, we're not that old, right? You're a year older than me, and Kent's 32 years older than us. And
I thought you were going to give me credit for being 32. I'm like, what is this new Nicholas?
No.
Puts
you're
me
old.
Straight into, like, you know, retirement age.
Yep. It's a beautiful thing, Kent, to be able to hunt in retirement age. But so we're not that old, but we've watched our friends specifically from, like, high school, right? Yeah. We've had enough time from high school to see, okay, what are you doing with your life? And frankly, I do not see any shame at all in a 9-to-5 and then living your life afterward. But you watch who are they hanging out with? You know, who do they associate themselves? And they kind of, like, form into that. But what's really cool about Midwest Whitetail is that while every single person I've met and been able to hang out with a bunch of you guys so far, you guys are amazing guys, but none of you guys are gods, right? You're quote unquote normal guys that just were obsessed or focused on something. And if you're obsessed and focused, I used to tell my brother this all the time, because right when he was trying to find friends when he moved to college, mm-hmm. I said, whatever you want your friends to do, just go do that. You want friends that rock climb, go rock climbing. You'll find friends that rock climb, right? Yep. And so if you're wanting to rub shoulders with landowners, incredible hunters, become a good hunter, mm-hmm. you know, by hunting or start looking into real estate. And as Skip says, don't wait more than 2 years, otherwise it'll never happen. You know, so mm-hmm. these things of becoming the person you want to hang out with. And then at the same time, it's kind of a paradox where then you'll start hanging out with those people that do that, and then you'll become more like them, and then all of a sudden you're working your dream job, you know, and chasing dreams with your, like, dream friends. You know what I mean? It's just a cool way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell interns this. I tell my guys this. It's like, if I am in my position today, anybody can do it. Because I have made every mistake and boneheaded decision, and, you know, like, I'm not ashamed to admit, like, 19 to 25, really big idiot, you know, like, and yet somehow the people around me didn't quit on me. Somehow, you know, I was afforded the right opportunities to continue going forward, and that was, yes, I work hard, but I don't know, like, ethic matters. Everybody always likes to say, yes, you work hard, you'll have opportunity. That's not true. Like, you do have to get lucky. You do have to be in the right place at the right time.
Just like killing a big buck.
Yeah, yeah. And if I had, like, one slogan for anybody listening to this, a young kid, it's like the best piece of advice that I would say, and this is like the track thing, right? Work as hard as you would if somebody was looking, and you can never choose when your opportunity is going to present itself. You don't know if you're going to get a job. You don't know if you're going to get the opportunity to, hey, what edit can you do? You want to do Chasing November. Mm-hmm. But you can control in between the lines every day how you prepare for yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like one of the things I consistently see today is people want the guarantee, okay, I've got this thing. Now I need to work hard to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to be successful, no matter what it is, whether it's podcasting or, you know, your guys' habitat business, you have to do the work before somebody promises you a reward. Mm-hmm. And that's where, if you love it, that's a very good place to start.
Yeah.
You know, and deer hunting is what I loved. That turned into cameras, being a passport, for lack of a better term. Had no idea I'd fall in love with video editing. Hmm. I mean, to today, like, I'm a deer hunter first. But it's pretty damn cool that I've gotten to be responsible for preserving memory after memory after memory for friends of mine.
Yeah. So, like, my brother can do this. He can just sit down at 8 a.m., edit, get up for a slice of pizza over lunch, and then get up again for dinner. Yep. Can you do that?
Yeah, I mean,
that's crazy.
If you think about what means a lot to me is, like, and maybe this doesn't resonate too much with hunting for you, but I've always told myself, if there's a cold front, I'm going to hunt it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going. And so I've taught myself to become a lot more efficient over the years. But, you know, if Bill ever listens to this, he'll hate to hear this. But I can think of many times where, you know, we have shows every Monday, 8 a.m. every Monday they came out. I can think of multiple times I didn't start an episode until Sunday at 6 p.m. in November. And Bill's like, how's it going? I'm like, yeah, it's great. It's going great. And in my mind, I'm like, I ain't even started it, but I'm hunting today.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'm up from 6 p.m. to 7 a.m. Not recommended. Terrible efficiency. And it does not result in the best product. Would not. Today, if my guys did that, I'd be very frustrated. But out of essence, for love of what I did and being in the woods, it's crazy what it takes you to, Joy and I, this is something in our relationship. She's like, you need to stop working. I'm like, well, you
should. For anyone who doesn't know, Josh and Joy Van Weingarten, one of our favorite interviewees on the podcast, are in a relationship. So.
Yeah, that's a whole different story.
We had to get her to harass him to join us on the podcast.
That's not true. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's true. But in the beginning, she's like, you need to stop working. And I was like, super offended by it. And I was like, maybe you should make a job happen where you don't like it or you don't hate it.
Yeah.
I was like, don't project your unhappiness with what you do onto me. I enjoy what I do. Mm-hmm. I hope that everybody gets the chance to work a job that doesn't feel like a job.
Yeah. So you, on the outside, you probably look like a workaholic, but it's just, you just love what you do. And you're like, well, I do it for work and I do it for hobby. So all of a sudden that's 80 hours a week. And
before this year, last April, 2017 through 2023, I had to worry about myself, worry about my own deadlines. You know, being a video editor, there's a lot of independence that came with that. And luckily, whether it was Jared or Bill or Mark, I was able to pretty much earn the opportunity of like, hey, you do your thing, and then when the review's ready, we go. So I never have had to work a 9-to-5, or I don't do well with micromanaging. I just, and I think anybody that has a quote unquote creative edge or itch or in their field, like your brother, you can't choose when that creativity kicks in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
True.
And so like,
that's very true.
There's days I wake up, I'm like, I'm gonna get this edit done, and I sit down and I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
Yep. And then all of a sudden at 8 p.m. that night, I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
And then it's 2 in the morning. But yeah, I mean, it's the shift for me as a workaholic has turned into this last year has been a very big change, growth, struggle. I'm now responsible for everybody's responsibilities. I haven't had to do that ever. Yeah. And, like I said, my team, I'm so lucky to have the guys that we do. Ryan Ludwig, Gavin Katerba, all the interns we've had. I mean, there's a long list that make my job a lot easier than it could be.
Yeah. Because they all love their job.
Yeah, man. I don't know why they, everybody's got their own why, but it's a team, and everybody sees a product on Monday and sees a hunting show and they're like, that's cool. But obviously having gone through the gauntlet of every phase as a viewer, as the new guy, as the lead editor, as the Chasing November guy, to today, like, for lack of a better term, help run it, it's like a lot of empathetic positions, through the whole sphere. So
we've talked around it this whole time, but what's interesting, so we do have a lot of listeners who probably do not hunt, which is cool, that's totally fine. And so maybe us talking
are you sure it's fine if someone doesn't hunt?
It's fine. Course it is. Anyone who thinks like, Josh, you could back me up on this, I would imagine, anyone who thinks like it's stupid to eat meat that you haven't hunted for needs to do the math. Like if the whole country was going to live on wild game, we'd have like one hunting season and then it would all be gone. We've tried to do that as a country before. And that takes me to, let's talk a little bit about the whitetail economy. Historically in Iowa, we eradicated our whitetail deer. They were totally extirpated right around the late 1890s into 1900 is kind of the darkest time where we had no deer left. And that was part of a whitetail economy that happened.
Mm-hmm.
They were used as a resource for their hides and for their meat. Yep. Today, we're using them as an economy again, but in a much different way, and I think in a way that elevates them to reflect their true value as opposed to just their exploitate. How much can I exploit this for until it's gone?
Yeah.
And how could you explain to a non-hunter the importance of whitetail deer from an economy standpoint today?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a lot of ways you could talk about that. I mean, just like any industry, there's every company that exists. There's its own economic impact there with products, you know, and maybe that doesn't necessarily impact Iowa. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, like Iowa is a quote unquote smaller number of hunters, but mm-hmm. you know, you could start off with, you know, I had this argument with a lady in my college class. It was like the peak of my college career because I didn't care about college, but mm-hmm. it was a debate class, took an evening course because it was the, you know, November time frame, and I was like, well, it gets dark after, you know, some daylight savings, I can get out of the stand and go hunt or go to class. And that particular day, like, got stuck in the stand, was late, showed up in camo, and within minutes was getting the whole, like, why did you have to kill things, psycho, yeah. you know, discussion. And I was like, you are so uneducated. Yeah. And so following...
sitting in the same class as that person.
Yeah, and so going, this is a tangent of, you know, the economic impact, but she was just like, why can't you just accept that, why can't you just appreciate nature? Go to a nature park, go to this, go to that. And I was like, you're welcome, by the way. And she's like, what do you mean? And I was like, you're not doing anything to fund conservation efforts. You're not
yeah.
helping fund the state DNR that, by the way, is the reason why those places exist.
Yeah.
And kudos to the Iowa DNR. But it's, you know, as it pertains to Iowa, natural resource management is heavily funded by anglers and fishermen and bird hunters, not just deer hunters.
Right.
And so you talk about an economic impact. It's like, take a look at the... you know, what remains in Iowa, whether it's public lands, whether it's IHAP programs, whether it's, you know, any of those things, it's funded by hunters.
Yeah.
That whitetail yep. deer loses its quality, loses its age structure. You know, if you just continue to destroy the resource, and we could go into a long tangent about, you know, why the Iowa Sportsman Club was created. But the quality of the whitetail deer herd that exists in Iowa is why the coveted, you know, hunters around us want to come hunt here. It's why there's a 6-year waiting period. It's why people are willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what it costs between a hunting license stamp and a tag.
Yeah,
but it's much more expensive bucks. Than if I go hunt Nebraska, Illinois, Missouri, yeah, Minnesota, Indiana. Or Wisconsin. Every yeah. state around us. And, you know, so if you're a non-hunter, it's very important. If you're a non-hunter and you're listening to this podcast, you clearly care about the natural world,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, the biggest attack on this entire economic, you know, as we're calling it, opportunity in the whitetail deer, it's not deer hunters. It's people who don't hunt, such as maybe people who look at a deer and say economic. They're like, you know, this is a big argument I have with farmers.
Yeah.
It's like, I totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
Deer can be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Coons, I think, can be a lot more responsible.
Yeah, Skip's done a good job shining
yeah,
light
yeah.
on that.
It's amazing. Everybody's like, crop damage, deer. And it's like, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of where I'm going with this is, and this is on hunters as much as anything. If I could say to non-hunters on this podcast, it's like, have a relationship and have a conversation with a respectful hunter. You know how much ground is locked up in our state that's not getting hunted? The deer do yeah. have maybe a problematic, you know, population size or...
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is causing legitimate damage to crops. Talk to a bow hunter.
Yeah.
Build yeah. a relationship with one of them. And it's like, you know, being a permission guy myself, it's harder and harder to get permission because of whether it's leasing or whether, you know, frankly, it's just like, I had a bad experience one time.
Yep.
You know, so whether it's a hunter listening to this or a non-hunter listening to this, both can be extremely beneficial, you know, and I don't know if this is more of an ag podcast or a conservation minded podcast, but
depends on the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be, you know, if you want to talk about making a huge economic impact or preserving it, you know, look at all the bills that are introduced. The one goal is to kill more deer.
Yep. Yep.
Well, you have the solution right in front of you that can help both parties.
Right.
Hunters have to be respectful, and they have to do all the things appropriately. I'm sure you've heard horror stories.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And it's yep. terrible. Like, there's certain landowners, I'm like, I would never let somebody step foot yep. out here either, you know?
Yep.
But, you know... I've never really thought about it, honestly. I'm, like, completely winging it right now.
No, no, this is
economic impact. Because, like, I don't know. I mean, I look at deer, and I'm like...
Well, you get paid by yeah. by whitetail being in.
Around. Yeah, in theory, you know, and that's something I always argue, though. I don't hunt for a living, and I'll fight until I die. Like,
but you edit people who are hunting.
Well, I'm just saying, like, our economic impact is it's marketing. It's not hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you can go kill a big deer doesn't mean that it turns into something valuable for the powers that are invested in it. So, you know, when somebody finds a job where you hunt for a living, please sign me up.
Yeah.
Because all that I do with my career is I sleep less.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get to go hunt more because I'm, like, in the industry.
Right. Yeah.
That's not it. I've just earned the ability to have a bit more of a freedom-based job.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because you love editing, but you also, it seems like number one's hunting. Editing's not too far behind on a number two, but
no.
So do you ever get frustrated, like, I got to get this in, and I just really want to go hunting?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, when my dad, I just remember growing up, take a week of vacation, and I was like, I couldn't imagine, like, I was like, if I have 50 years of hunting left, you know, 50 times seven, no way. That's it? That's all I have left to hunt the rut? No chance, you know? And I was like, I have got to find something. Love my dad, appreciate, respect everything he's accomplished in his career. But I was like, I'm not making my life based off of vacation time. And so, like, whether I love editing or not, or whether there's some days that it's inconvenient, like, this year I hunted less than I ever have. You're still around it.
Yeah.
You know, you're my team this year, for what it's worth, I was the only guy in Midwest Whitetail that didn't kill a deer. The only one.
Wow.
And I would do that every year. Because it's like, I got to go on recovery after recovery after recovery and see my buddies happy. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, people have such a misconception about you have to be the guy behind the bow. I mean, for us, it's like, if I'm filming a good friend shoot a deer, I'm just as excited. I'm probably more excited.
Yeah.
Because
it's
like, you're just there, man. It's all about being there. It's all about being there with your friends. And I think that's another misconception, is like, people think it's so much about the killing of an animal. And call for what it is. You're taking the life of something. But it's not. I mean, that's such a small facet of it, you know? And so, to answer your question, man, like I said earlier, choose your suck.
Yeah.
I'm still working on hunting.
Yeah, right.
You know, and like, I still get to hunt 3-4 times as much as the average guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I made certain sacrifices to do that. I have an amazing girlfriend that understands the selfishness of a career like this, which is why Joy and I work so well, because she's independent. She doesn't need me, right, to be happy and to have a busy day. And luckily, she likes the outdoors. But no, I mean, it's, you catch yourself, for sure, some days, like, man. And then you, like, take a step back and go, I could be doing a million other things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That much less enjoyable. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good insight to who Josh is, to have that thought at a young age, like, wow, if all of my hunting is wrapped up in 1 week for the next 50 years, that's not even a year's worth of hunting. And that's... You know, I think that people need to look at life that way more often, and realize how much you're missing out on to have. You know, we use the word trade off all the time on this podcast. Everything's a trade off, and you got to find the trade offs that you're most comfortable with.
I really like that. I've never heard of that before, but I mean, it's like, you say that, my mind goes, don't attribute my young self to having this vision. It's like, no, it was watching Bill. Like, this guy traded off, right? Like, sacrifice early for payoff later.
Yeah.
You know, and like, Jared did the same thing. Mike did the same thing. Owen, like, every person that I sit here today and go, I respect them. They traded something then for what they have now. That's a great way to put it. You know, I'm always like super negative. I'm like, stop being a complainer, and you know, it's like, I have a negative connotation of like, that must be nice. It drives me crazy. That's a much more
It's like Jay Kofork said in his pocket, it's a loser mentality.
It is.
That must be nice, like, look how lucky you got.
It's guaranteed you're just gonna stay there. Like, trade-off is a great, I'm gonna start using that. I mean, like, that's, I'm gonna use that in our internship. It's like, you're trading off time today for what you claim to want to do.
Yeah.
For however many years. Thomas Sowell, the great economist Thomas Sowell, he gets credit for that one. The phrase is, there are no solutions, there's only trade-offs.
I love that.
And
I want to go back to what you were saying earlier, though, Kent, because Kent looked around at his life, 8 years into a teaching career, and I, from my understanding, it started off pretty high point and start going, you know, further and further downhill as things were changing. It just didn't fit Kent anymore, right? And he looked around and said, this can't be it, and made a huge career change and took a pay cut just to talk about your finances here on took a pay cut to say, like, I'm going to trade these things. I'm going to start my career over in my mid-60s, and I'm getting...
goodness. Thank goodness for Medicare.
It's early 30s, but already had a family, had his third kid at the time, and said, this trade-off is worth it, where he can come to work and enjoy it. And I don't need to talk about how much you like the job, but I think that's cool. You made the trade-off. And something else I want to talk about with the sacrifice part is that early sacrifices compound over time.
Yeah.
So if someone makes a sacrifice when they're 40, when they're 60, it will definitely have some. But if you make that same sacrifice, if you put that same amount of money in stocks when you're 25 as opposed to when you're 40, it's like, it'd be four times the size, you know? And so don't just think about that in money. Think about that in time spent with your loved ones. Think about that in time, in terms of value in any sorts of things, a hobby or a skill that you're getting good at. I don't know. There's all sorts of proverbs in every civilization that talk about that. Absolutely.
I mean, it's about, for me, it's the biggest thing. Just find what makes you tick and start there. I mean, and the thing is it's okay. It changes over time.
Yeah.
Mine turned from hunting to media to editing, and like, it was all connected, but today, and 10 years ago, it was never like, I want to be a video editor. I can't wait to do that. I can't wait then to manage multiple video editors and head up projects. That was never a part of it. Just trusted that, you know, the deer, I knew that was where I wanted to be. Had no idea where it was. Got lucky along the way. But it's all about being inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, you know, when you think about like what Cam preaches or Rogan or anybody that's doing things at a super high level, they're ready to be there every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably the same thing with what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's how you take things to another level.
Yep.
Is, you know, again, I feel like now that I'm saying these things out loud, I have a lot of negative connotations. Choose your suck. Maybe it's pick your inspiration. Maybe that's a better way to put it. But it's like Drake. You know, Drake went to Midwest Whitetail as an intern. That's how I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And now look where he's landed.
Yeah.
With the exact best person, with his best friend Justin.
Yep.
And he's doing stuff with Skip. Like, he's doing exactly what he loves. Yeah. He's outside often, improving the habitat around him. And, you know, it's just, again, I love seeing my friends succeed, but it all goes back to trusting the gut and then,
following it. A common trait that I think people who, so there's different, like you alluded to this earlier, there's different segments within the hunting community, and there's different degrees of how somebody identifies as a hunter. There's the casual hunter, and I'm not saying any of these are more right than others. There's a casual hunter who might go out, you know, a few weekends a season, and that's plenty for them. They're happy. Their trade-off is, I don't get to hunt so much, but it's not my favorite thing anyways, and I get to do all these vacations or whatever else they spend their time doing instead.
Can't even imagine someone doing something. I can't think of something.
But
the other thing.
But if you want to see somebody who's, to again, like, play off what Josh was saying earlier as far as the value that a hunter, if you're a non-hunter and you're wondering what value do these people have, I think people who are truly like their lifestyle is hunting, that is somebody who's all in, you know, they're, and that's why when Nicholas talked about the change that I made is like, you gotta be all in, you know, if you're gonna try and kill a deer, you can get lucky a few times, but really, if you want to do it consistently, you gotta be all in. Like, you gotta be all in with managing your scent control. You got to be all in with choosing the right spot to set up, whether that means sit in a tree stand, sit on the ground, sit in a blind, sit, you know, totally take everything down and reset it up in a better spot if you have to. It's getting up super early in the morning or staying in your tree stand until all the deer leave late into the evening. you know, like you have to be totally all in. And the same is true for anyone who's crazy about chasing elk, anybody who's just a super avid turkey hunter. Like, you got to be totally bought in. And the trade-off is all that upfront labor and hardship. And I was just talking with Jason Phelps just a few hours ago from Phelps Game Calls, and he talked about, I've really, through time, gotten comfortable with being uncomfortable, and that has paid off. And that is, that translate, like, so look to those people that are like that, because that translates over to all these other aspects of life. Going back to Josh being a 12-year-old kid obsessively watching Midwest Whitetail and saying, that's what I want to do. You know, you ever hear the phrase, dress for the job that you want, not the job that you have? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of along those lines. When you were buying up that equipment and you were, you know, you were structuring your class schedule and rubbing shoulders with the people you did, is because you're laying that groundwork to launch you into the thing that you're really after. And it's paying off now, and it will continue to do so. And I think to the folks listening in, you all have your dreams. Dream big, like Josh learned from Bill Winky back in 2008. And you'll start to see the needle move in your own life, but also in those things you like to affect, that you're hoping to affect. We quote Tabitha Panis on here all the time for saying, she said, somebody told me when I was in high school and I didn't know what I wanted to do for a career, they told me, do what you love. And she's like, you know, that's an okay saying, but a better one is, like, find something that you care passionately about helping fix.
Mm-hmm. And a problem you want to solve.
Yeah, find a problem you want to solve. And I think when you adopt these same mentalities of being all in and wanting to move the needle on some of these things, that naturally starts to happen, because that passion that we're all born with about something propels us so much more. And like you said earlier, Josh, surrounding yourself with other like-minded people like that, it's like you have the best team in the world pulling you along. And that's how it's been for me since I came to Hoxie, you know, and working with Carol and Nicholas, my life has changed, you know, so much for the better. And I think, so for value of what hunters mean to the community, you find those people that are really dedicated hunters, and you found a person who's all in on something, and pick up those traits from them.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's all in the details. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people who are where, quote unquote, I look at that I want to be, let's just say comparatively at their age, they weren't trying to climb the mountain. They were worried about the step in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest deer killers I know, they're the guys that pay attention to the smallest micro details that you don't think of. And it's like, it doesn't matter whether it's deer hunting. Like, I take a look at, I just remember going on the tour at Hoxie with Joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I had no idea because that's one thing. Like, I am, one of my biggest flaws, and I've told Joy this, and I've told Drake this, is like, my dream's to own land, but if I did it today, I wouldn't have the necessary skill sets to maintain it and grow it and to make mm-hmm. it better. That bothers the heck out of me.
Yeah.
And when I went to the farm that day, watched all these things, I was like, whoa, there's so much intricacy. The intentionality of every single seed, where it is, why it's here, when it's here,
mm-hmm.
the time of year things are occurring. It's like, look at your dad, look what's being built. It's not because you guys are like, yeah, we got a good seed, it's great, it grows. Yeah. It's like, no, it's because of every single detail.
Yeah.
That's how you separate. And it's like, the point is, like what you're getting at, it's like, it doesn't matter if you're a hunter, if it's what you guys do, if you're a doctor, you can always be the best version by following the details and surrounding yourself with the people who do that.
Man, mm-hmm. dude, I love that. I mean, technically we're talking about hunting and how that relates to the economy and conservation, but I feel like I'm listening to like a life coach.
That's good. Episode. Yeah, no, it's really good.
I feel like what's actually happening is this brews inside of Josh just all the time, but then when he's on camera, he's supposed to be talking about whitetail, so now he's finally able to like just go after it. He's like, dude, this is what I've learned, you know. And you've learned some really cool stuff, and you got a lot of cool things rattling around in your brain. Do you see yourself at Midwest Whitetail in 10 years?
I hope so. Yeah,
really.
No, I mean, I didn't come back to ever leave. I mean, Yeah, I mean, you never know what capacity. I know that I have zero interest in ever relocating to another hunting show. Like, I promise you that. You know, Midwest Whitetail is so much more than that to me.
Yeah.
And I hope the Midwest Whitetail continues to evolve in what it offers and what it does outside of just being an episode a week.
Dude, you're like the dream employee. They call them entrepreneurs. So entrepreneur is someone who starts a company. Entrepreneur is someone who's in the company but loves it so much they work just as hard as the founder. And that's really cool. And it shows in your show. I mean,
well, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, and again, it's – I've always said, you know, one of the things, if you look back across Midwest Whitetail, and this isn't taking any credit away from what the past cultures have been.
Yeah.
But it's been a very big revolving door. And that's awesome, and it's led to millions of opportunities for everybody that we've talked about today. But I keep telling my guys, like, or people who are like, how are things going? And it's like, I'll determine us being successful by two things. One, that we exist in 5 years, and two, that the same team is there.
Yeah.
That's never happened.
That's really cool.
And
is there anything that you have a dream for in Midwest Whitetail that you know is like your bare minimum 5 years, maybe 10 years away from seeing any of that?
Honestly, no. I mean, it's like everything's just the day of. You know, like, and that's like, I wish I had more vision, you know, but the thing about media is just it's so fastly revolving, as I'm sure you guys have figured out.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The 5 year plan is just like, I want my guys to love what they do. I don't want them to burn out. Like, I've gone through a lot of ups and downs as an editor. You know, like, you talk about the whole, like, you know, can you sit there for 24 hours? I could. I did. I wouldn't do it today.
Yeah.
You know, like, the burnout's a real thing. Creative burnout's a real thing. And so I just want to help be a steward for efficiency, for creativity, and for guys, like, to never forget what it is we get to do every day.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that the company grows. I mean, we're obviously a media company as well. And so just outside of editing Midwest Whitetail and Chasing November or whatever, you know, like, we have the opportunity to scale that, you know, like, our guys love to storytell, and we have a lot of opportunities to do that in other spaces. Like, doesn't have to be a white-tailed deer to tell a good story. Yeah. Now, granted, if you mess up, deer don't yell at you, right? So, weddings or something, like, I have zero interest in ever doing it again. But, you know, so, like, when I think about scaling, it's that.
Yeah.
You know, now, I don't know. It takes the right people. It takes, you know, guys that love it for what it is. And I think we've got that today. We just got an office, or are getting an office for the first time in a long time. You over there in Washington. I won't be there, but the guys will.
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, 5 years from now, I just want to continue to build our culture, build the family, and hopefully continue to shoot big deer.
I've been in
small B-level movies, and I have I work with a company out of Des Moines that does agencies for, like, acting and stuff. Actually, I think I got one booked for early April here.
Nice.
I think that's the email that I got. Either that, or he's telling me that
Nick,
I did get
Nick
it.
Nick dresses up like one of the fruits for the Fruit of the Loom commercials.
Yeah, I know, and they pay me very well. No,
he's the grapes.
No. So, just not going to go there. All right. But that's all made up. It's all fake. It's all staged. Every part of it, from the makeup that we're wearing to the lighting, you know. But what you guys are doing is incredible. You guys have to film something that's real. I mean, even reality TV, just the fakest stuff you've ever seen in your life, right? And Duck Dynasty talked about it. They'd be like, you know what would be an interesting scene? We should have you guys do this. And they wouldn't script it.
Notice how little hunting there was in Duck Dynasty. Script hunting.
Exactly. And so there's all this fakeness, but, like, what Midwest Whitetail offers, and there's just not that many things that offer it, is a glimpse into the pure, real world. There's editing on post-editing, but there was no manipulating to, like, get it what it is. All the manipulating happened in the hunt, so it was a very natural hunt, you know. And so it's astounding that you can put together something that humans, while also being fed 20-second TikToks all the time, you know, and that you guys are able to create something so beautiful and wonderful. And I think it speaks to, one, what you're able to do as a group and the skill that you guys have, but two, it speaks to what humans long for. You know, we long to see those things.
If you're watching media, and specifically I've always said this with hunters, you know, like, I give us so much credit and respect to Bill Aaron, Greg Clements, Aaron Warburton, like when they created the Chasing November series, that really changed my captivation for videos, because I never felt like I was there more. And how intelligent of a decision to release it in August, right? As a bow hunter, what happens in August? You get that first cool day, giant velvet bucks are out. It's just like that reset button. I'm like, all right, best time of the year is coming up. And so when you think about what you were just alluding to, is that deer hunters, turkey hunters, duck hunters, whatever it might be. I mean, heck, it could extend to fishing, hikers, people building homes. I personally believe when we consume media, it's because we're not there doing it ourselves at that very moment. And Midwest whitetail,
that's a great point.
An emphasis on what we try to do is, okay, you know, you could have the mentality of I can't afford, I don't hunt private land, I don't live in Iowa, yada, 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 whatever. You can make all the excuses. Watch the video and you'll be there with us. You know, and so it's like we always have this discussion about how do we build our videos, how do we retain people more? Because the reality is like, I don't think people understand as viewers how helpful it is when they sit there and watch a full video. That really helps our videos do well. I don't think they realize how much it means when they comment or whether they share something. Like, unfortunately, all the different algorithms play in that. But the thing that by far has worked the best for us is trying to create media that puts people in the moment. And so it's like you could always ask a hunter, like, what are you excited about? And you play the clip of crunching leaves for them. And everyone's, oh, man, love that stuff. And half those people have never even seen that. And yet when you hear it, you smell it, you feel it, and you're in the moment. You know, it's like the same complaint of people are like blinds. Like, I'm sure you as a viewer, you're like, ah, another blind hunt. You don't care that it's in a blind. You're not. You don't care about that. What you care about is the sensory connection was broken. When you're in a blind and all you hear is some sort of, you know, scent machine or an ozonics going, you don't hear the rustling of the leaves. You don't hear the birds. It's like this, you got put in a box. Well, you're already in the box watching this. You're there trying to experience as if you were in the stand. And so it's just, you do talk about like the manipulation. It's like, for sure, we're trying to play off of human senses. I want you to, if you can't hunt today, I want you to feel like you are. And that's Midwest whitetail is just, the cool thing, I remember talking about Bill, you know, he was always so adamant on deer stories because it was the one thing that could never get old, because every single one's brand new. You know, and it's like you can think you know exactly what's going to happen on a given hunt or day, or I've got this buck or this spot. One thing I figured out is you just don't know. You have no idea what's going to happen. It's like that drop time deer. I'm like, dude, he's going to drop guaranteed in one of these two draws. He's been there for 3 weeks, and I get a text the other day. I saw him a mile and a half north, and I'm like, oh, no, you know. It's that's what keeps you coming back, though. It's so far removed from shooting.
It's well said. Very well said.
Cannot make this stuff up. Literally just have to record it. Man, you have anything else, Ken?
Well, yeah, just as we, you know, put a bow on this one.
How about put a bow in this one? No, it'd be an arrow.
If you're throwing your bow, that's because you missed.
But I'm not a dad yet.
But as we wrap this one up, and if Josh can leave one thing behind for his viewers and anyone who hears this podcast or consumes your media in other places, what's the one thing you'd want to pass on to those folks?
That's heavy. I mean, that's a hard one to answer. I mean, there's a million things I'd love to leave. One, I would say, as it pertains to Midwest Whitetail specifically, very thankful for the entire team, the entire support system that allows us the opportunity to still create. Everybody always thanks us. And it's like, it always astounds me. It's like, no, like, we don't get to do this without support. Period. Two, if I was going to leave like a mentality or like what would I take away from Josh, it's like, do not wait for your opportunity to prepare for your next chapter. If you have the inclination you want to do something, it's never, there's never been a world, you know, the internet's terrible in a lot of ways. You can learn any skill you ever want to via the internet. You just have to be able to train yourself to ask the right questions. And You know, that's what I tell every intern we come across, or intern applicant, or guy that's like, how'd you get into it? Just tried.
Yeah.
That's the first step.
Yep.
And I didn't wait. Yep. So,
man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, for sure. That was a great time. That was a great way to end this one. And as we look at, you know, what Nicholas and I are trying to accomplish, which is get more prairie on the not just the Iowa landscape, but all across our country, restore lost habitat where it makes sense to have it still. And we understand, you know, going back to the trade-off thing, if we're going to have 330 million people in this country, well, we can't have things as pristinely native as they once were. But we can have a whole lot more of it, and it's going to take a whole lot of work. And just like Josh said, the best time is now. We can't wait for that just to happen. Each one of us can play a role in that. We believe that strongly at Hoxie Native Seeds, which is the presenting sponsor of this podcast, the Prairie Farm Podcast. And if you have your own piece of ground, whether it's your yard or a giant field that could use some CRP and some highly erodible acres, or maybe you just want a perennial food plot for your back 40 that you hunt deer on yourself, you can head over to hoxienativeseeds.com and get going on that. Or for your backyard prairie, go to theprairiefarm.com and put in an order for some backyard pollinator, or just whatever else mix suits your fancy in that way. But as we heard today and learned so well from Josh, conservation happens one mind at a time.